is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant, Thomas Johnson, in this case. As the court is aware, this court remanded Mr. Johnson's case for resentencing after Booker was decided in January of 2005. The remand was a full resentencing for the district court to follow the mandates of Booker and consider both the sentencing guidelines and the 3553A factors. At the first status hearing after the remand, the district court was discussing counsel with Mr. Johnson, and Mr. Johnson said he didn't want to have particular attorneys represent him. The district court said, asked if he wanted to represent himself, and he said, yes, absolutely. And the court concluded with, yes, sir, you can represent yourself, and made no further formal inquiry of Mr. Johnson. When this court considers whether a defendant's waiver of a counsel was knowing and voluntary, the court considers four factors, and all of them weigh against the finding of a knowing and voluntary waiver in this case. The first, is whether there was a formal inquiry, and the evidence is certain that there was no formal inquiry because all the district court asked was confirming whether he wanted to represent himself. The district court must express the disadvantages of representing himself, the dangers. And
well, what is he looking for in the way of an altered sentence?
Mr. Johnson, of course, is looking for a lower sentence based on, of course, the sentencing guidelines and the 3553A factors, which, of course, weren't considered in his prior sentencing.
But isn't he serving another term, though?
He is, in fact, serving a consecutive term at this
time. So what is it that he has to gain from a lighter sentence?
If his sentence were reduced, the time would actually be credited toward his other sentence. So he would, in effect, spend ultimately less time in
prison. How much less?
It would depend on how much lower the sentence was and his good time credits on serving both sentences. So that of course, goes toward the second argument that I made regarding the district court's consideration or non-consideration of the 3553A factors. The district court, although they were presented by Mr. Johnson in his pro se filings, the district court didn't consider any of them and, in fact, sentenced him to a slightly higher sentence than he had been previously given without any reason for doing so.
Ms. Christensen,
yes.
Was any of the arguments that Johnson made in this, which appears to be the third sentencing proceeding, novel? Had these arguments been made before, or were they new?
As far as the legal arguments were, some of them were the same, and I'm not focusing on those. Of course, he made Booker-related arguments as well, some of which have been denied by this court regarding whether the guidelines can actually be applied to him or not. Or whether Booker can be applied to him. But as far as the arguments regarding his 3553A considerations, those, while present before, had never been argued because they were not part of the sentencing consideration prior to Booker.
I don't understand that. One could make arguments before. They were usually couched in terms of asking for a departure.
Sure. Arguments.
No, I'm asking whether the substantive arguments, the reasons given, were new or old.
The reasons given for a lower sentence?
Yes.
The facts behind them were old, but the arguments themselves had not been made before. So they, in fact, they could have been argued before, although it was disfavored to make those types of arguments prior to Booker. And just the way the sentencing hearing finally occurred shows the district court made no consideration of those factors and simply heard from each party and then went right into pronouncing the sentence. And this cannot be adequate under Booker or any of this court's case law since Booker as a consideration of the 3553A factors. And before I get into my rebuttal time, I'd like to go back to some of the factors of the waiver of counsel. Specifically, I'd like to address the government's argument that Mr. Johnson had, in fact, represented himself prior to this situation. I've represented Mr. Johnson for a long time. I scoured the pre-sentence report, which the government has cited in support of this argument, although it didn't cite a page number. The only mention of Mr. Johnson doing anything pro se was in 1983 when he filed a pro se motion in response to his counsel's attorney's motion to withdraw his counsel. And this, despite the fact that it was more than 20 years before and not in federal court, is nothing regarding his experience of representing himself. It certainly has pales in comparison to representing oneself at a post-Booker resentencing hearing. And there's no evidence in the record that Mr. Johnson otherwise understood the dangers and disadvantages of representing himself. The district court certainly didn't fulfill its affirmative obligation to discuss those disadvantages with him and did not impress upon him how important this situation was. It was not a simple, narrow remand, as the government would argue. It was a full remand, in fact, broader than his prior sentencing had been, because the district court was now to not only consider the guidelines, but also to consider all of the 3553A factors. I'll touch briefly on the background and experience of Mr. Johnson. He is educated, however, he's not educated in the law. And this was not your average resentencing hearing on a narrow issue. It was a situation that many defense attorneys at the time were unsure of how sentences were going to go, much less pro se defendants. It was very important to have an attorney present to present the 3553A factors in a coherent and strong fashion, and that could not be done by Mr. Johnson proceeding pro se.
And what are the factors you would have stressed?
I of course, would have stressed his medical issues. He's got significant health issues. He's had strokes and heart attacks, and suffers from diabetes. His age, his prior job record. He had always held a job during the times that he was not in prison.
Excuse me. You're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Mr. Shaw.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Manish Shaw, and I represent the United States. With respect to the defendant's self-representation, I think the record as a whole does reveal that the defendant made a knowing and intelligent waiver and actually represented himself reasonably competently in the sentencing hearing. His sentencing memorandum is, in fact, articulate and coherent and outlines 3553A factors that he felt were mitigating in his case.
Did he discuss his health problems?
He did, Your Honor. He references his health. He referenced the fact that he was employed in the automobile industry. He referenced the fact that his criminal history.
Did he consider his employment in the automobile industry to be pro or con, up or down?
He took the position that it was pro and that it was a good thing. I would also, with respect to the 3558 factors, note that these were not novel arguments. In the earlier sentencing.
Wasn't the health issue novel to a degree? Part of what he was saying is that my health has deteriorated. We know more about my health now than before.
I believe that's right, Your Honor. Although in the 2003 sentencing proceedings, his health was an issue at that time. I believe there was a time when proceedings had to be continued because of his health. There's really no doubt, I think, that Judge Kaur was well aware of the defendant's health situation and that the defendant viewed his own health as a mitigating factor. Again, with respect to the defendant's choice to proceed pro se, that was absolutely his choice and one that we can look at the record and understand that he did so knowingly and intelligently. He filed a number of pro se pleadings throughout the case. 1999 and 2000, he was filing pro se pleadings. This was a defendant who wanted affirmatively to take an active role in his representation. So when in 2006 he says, yes, absolutely, when asked, do you want to represent yourself, that is a knowing and intelligent waiver. And then I'll just, as I have already said, touch on the 3553A issue. The judge did comply with the procedures in the sense that he gave everybody an opportunity to be heard. He did state on the record that he had the sentencing memorandum. He considered the sentencing memorandum. He addressed the legal issues that Mr. Johnson raised in the sentencing memorandum. The judge then imposed a sentence within the advisory guidelines range. He is not required to make further findings under 3553A when that is the sentence he imposes. And unless the panel has any additional questions, for the reasons we set forth in our brief, government requests that the court affirm the sentence imposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Anything further, Ms. Christensen?
Just briefly, Your Honors. I am fully aware that Mr. Johnson is well-spoken and writes well. I would like to assert that many people are well-spoken and write well who are not adequate to represent themselves in a federal criminal case after Booker. That certainly should not mitigate against Mr. Johnson in this situation. He did file pro se pleadings throughout the case. However, he was always represented by counsel during those times and had never expressed any desire to represent himself, even though he was filing pro se filings. The district court's inquiry was so limited as to be non-existent in this case and therefore cannot be found to have produced a knowing and voluntary waiver of Mr. Johnson's right to counsel. And Mr. Johnson respectfully requests this court remand this matter for resentencing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.
Okay.